Welcome to Creatures of Statute, a podcast of the County Supervisors Association, where we explore the policies and partnerships that shape Arizona's counties and their service to local residents. I'm Craig Sullivan, and I'm joined today by my colleague Jen Marson, Executive Director of the Arizona Association of Counties. Welcome, Jen. Thanks for coming over.
Thank you so much for inviting me. What a pleasure.
So, Jen, we're in the policy development season, both our organization and yours, where our clients have given us a lot of issues to process and try to set a legislative agenda going forward. So I thought today we'd talk a little bit about that, learn about the ACO process. But first, give our listeners a little bit of a sense of what ACO does.
Sure. So the Association of Counties is largely known, I think, for their advocacy work. But in addition to advocacy, we also have an education platform associated with our group to make sure that we're providing professional development or office-specific development tools for their members. We do conferences every year. We do webinars, anything that we can do to not only raise the platform of our membership, but also educate the membership and the public about what counties do.
Now, you've been at the association since, I think, 2002. I've been here since 2005. So tell us a little bit about your career trajectory and how you rose to become executive director.
When I graduated from college, I had an uncle who was a lobbyist. And so I knew I sort of, after talking to him, wanted to be in the government kind of space. And I had an interview with the House of Representatives for, I think it was September 13th, 2001. And so when September 11th happened, we all got notifications that the government is doing nothing. We're shutting down. We don't know what's going on. And of course, the whole country was scared. And I thought, okay, I guess I'll go back to school. So I went back to get my master's degree at ASU. And as a master's student, I learned about the ASU Legislative and Government Internship Program. And so I was selected by ACO as the intern through that program in December of 2002. And I have been with them ever since. So people who say that internships don't work out, I am a classic example of the ones that do.
Oh, absolutely. And there are a lot of legislative interns that are around here. There seems to be a gravitational pull to the state capitol once we go through that internship program.
I totally agree. You know, we have had some interns that have stayed because you either love it or hate it, right? And we have had some interns that are like now a firefighter because they did not like the government legislative process.
You know, I've really appreciated your years of service at ACO because it's allowed us to work together for many years. And I really think that the continuity of leadership over at ACO and here has really fostered a strong collaboration between our associations over the years.
I totally agree. I think our staffs talk all the time. You and I, you know, communicate all the time. And I think that just serves not only our associations, but our members.
Oh, it's very true.
Yeah.
And it's a real strength having the collaboration working together. And I've always kind of viewed it as an analog of what happens in the county constitutional structure, where you have the separate elected officials that all have their specific authorities, the Board of Supervisors as well. But to make the county function in a productive way, folks really have to come together and work together. It's team county. And that's what I really experience with ACO.
Thank you so much. I feel the same way about CSA.
So moving on a little bit, let's talk about policy development. I have in my hand ACO's proposals under consideration. If my math is correct, there's about 47. So Jen, tell us a little bit about your policy development process and some of the issues you all are looking at.
So we start reminding our membership at about late April, early May. Hey, I know we're still in the current legislative session, but I need you to start thinking about the one that's going to happen next year, because our deadline for our members to submit proposals to us is August the 1st. And so by every August the 1st, we ask that all of our, we call them affiliates, so each category of elected office, an assessor, a treasurer, a recorder, et cetera, we call them affiliates of ACO, and we ask them to have their proposals to us by August the 1st. As a staff, we take between the 1st and basically the end of October to do research on them, create a policy analysis, go out into the community and find out who's going to love this issue, who's going to hate it, so that our board, when they vote at the end of October, has the full picture. Is this going to be an easy bill? Although one could make an argument that no bills are easy. Is this going to be a heavy lift? Is this all hands on deck, et cetera? And so then at the end of October, our board of directors, made up entirely of elected county officials from across the state in a variety of different offices, vet and look through all of those, and they will decide which of those become part of our county government platform for 2026.
And I know that process of due diligence to support the membership is always a period of discovery, right? I mean, I often see proposals and I think one thing, but as I really go through that process, you learn so much about the complexities of policies we work on.
You know, we get so mired down in what we do here and it's all consuming, especially when we're in session. But when you're doing that research of each of the proposals, you find out, oh, Missouri's been doing this for 10 years. Oh, this has been happening in Florida for the last 90 days, or whatever the case may be. And so it's really nice to sort of realize we're not alone.
Very true. There's a lot of commonality across the country for sure. When I was looking at the proposals, it really struck me because the policy breadth, assessment of property, elections, education, public safety, criminal justice, it's really expansive. And some of the measures that I saw under consideration are very substantive policy changes. Others are small adjustments that are really just seeking efficiencies or operational improvements. And it really kind of highlights how counties often, to make simple changes to improve the way business is done, we have to go to the state capitol.
Unfortunately, that's true. It would be kind of nice if we could just operate a little more independently, but as political arms of the state, we have no choice. And so even when you're doing something minor, like many years ago, there was a bill, maybe you guys ran it actually, to allow counties to accept credit card payments.
We did.
To people out in the world, they were like, duh, of course, but counties can only do that which the legislature says we can do. And so you all had to go and ask for that permission.
Yeah, very true. I remember that well. A couple of bills that I wanted to ask you about, I saw about five of them that are common between the two organizations. And two, I wanted to briefly ask you about. I saw a proposal coming in related to short-term rentals. And when I was at the League of Cities and Towns conference in August, the session on short-term rentals was heavily attended by city council members, also county elected officials. I was very interested to see that. Mm. And there was a lot of local conversation about maybe after 10 years or so, it's time to revisit the topic, look at how we're implementing this policy, how it's been performing. And then I saw an issue pop up on your agenda here as well. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting one because in working with the assessors, they have had this same mindset for a very long time, even though the assessors themselves have changed as elections come and go, right? And that was, when I first started, it was in relation to Prop 13 in California. And the mindset was, why are you treating properties differently when they're the same kind of property? They had that mindset my entire career at ACO, and they have that mindset now with the short-term rentals. You have a property that may look like a house, but it is acting, its current use is like a motel or a hotel. And so why are we treating the action of that property differently than a motel or a hotel? And that's what this proposal seeks to do, is sort of provide some clarity and some consistency based on current use. And I'm putting that in quotation marks for those of you who are listening. Current use is a defining characteristic of how assessors must assess property. And so if we're going to adhere to that, as the legislature and the statute says that we should, then we believe that it probably needs to be more consistent.
Yeah, I understand the intent of that. When we flash back to what the short-term rental legislation was sold as, we often heard about residents renting out a casita or something like that. And what I heard at that conference where the local officials were coming together was a lot of concerns about just investors across the country and internationally purchasing housing stock and then just turning it into a local business, as you described.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only does that have property tax consequences for counties, right? But it also has no housing opportunities for people who just want to live and work in Arizona.
Yeah, we're hearing that quite a bit in this housing crisis that we're experiencing.
Yeah.
Let's pivot a little bit into elections. You know a little something about that.
You've been
tip of the spear on election issues for many years, and we appreciate your good work in that area.
Thank you.
One of the items that we have on our agenda, and I know it's on your agenda as well, came from the election officials related to moving the primary date. Mm-hmm. Give us a little background on that issue and where you're hoping to go.
Sure. So this goes back to the 2024 legislative session. We ran a very big bill that took about 10 months of every single day negotiating to get through. And it had to do with moving the primary in 2024 and some other tangential things, all to make sure that Arizona's military voters post-primary would get their general election ballot in time to get it back to the county, and to make sure that if there was a recount in the race for president that Arizona would be able to do all of the administrative things associated with processing that recount in time for our Electoral College votes to be able to be counted at the federal level. So that was a lot of work in 2024, and we were successful, and the 2024 primary went well. If we hadn't have changed the law, we would have had a problem because we actually did have a recount in the primary. The 2024 presidential race did not have to go to recount, so that was not a concern, but we had planned for it in case it had happened. That's all great. The problem was, because of the way the negotiations worked out in 2024, it was a one-year fix only. And so knowing that this timing issue is a problem in perpetuity, we have to fix the primary forever moving forward to always do the last Tuesday in July, which is what it was in 2024. The world did not collapse. Voters still voted. Everything worked out okay. So we'd like to make that a permanent change. And then also some of the other technical calendar-ish items that are inside, like making sure the cure period is calendar days instead of business days. All of those changes work together to shrink the calendar to make sure there's enough time to do all the things that election departments have to do to canvass an election. So we're hoping that not only CSA, but also ACO's board of directors will adopt that policy because it's so important and impacts so many voters. And then we're hoping that that bill will be sort of the first bill out of the gate with an emergency clause. Because, of course, candidates are a crucial part of any election, right? And they have some laws that are incredibly important, and they're all based on the primary date. So if we're going to move the primary in the year of the primary, which is unfortunately what we had to do in 2024, we want to move it as soon in the year as possible so that candidates or people who are interested in the election have as much notice as possible about when that primary date is going to be.
And when would the date land? Is it late in July?
Correct. It would be the last Tuesday in July.
And so as you play this forward, and I know you've been doing a lot of education with state leaders, governor's office, and you want to try to do it early and get an emergency clause on it, is there a date that you're trying to map all this to? Is there a date by which you'd be very concerned if you went past?
Well, I will just pull the same date that we used in 2024, which is basically like mid-February. I think we can get it done sooner than that, because if you give someone a date, then they will wait until that date oftentimes to make decisions, and we'd rather have it sooner than later.
This issue really resonates with me because it really highlights that counties are partners with the state in implementing state law, in this case, election law, and the whole focus by election officials, supervisors, recorders is about making sure the processes work for constituents. That's what it's about. It's not partisan. It's about how we do the job efficiently and folks can count on it.
Correct. I mean, this is especially true in the realm of elections because there's been such a spotlight on it in recent years, right? But for counties, it's about implementability. Can we actually do the thing that's being proposed by XYZ bill? Sometimes it's not really about the policy. It's about implementability. And ACO often writes amendments to make bills better, even if at the end of the day, we still oppose them. Because that way, if it passed, at least we could do it, even if we didn't like the policy behind it.
So that's a great point, and it's a nice segue into the next area I wanted to explore with you. Both of our associations exist to deal with the hundreds of bills that come in that affect county operations. And so we and you spend a lot of time analyzing those issues. Talk a little bit about your process for doing that and taking positions and then reaching out to lawmakers based on the direction of your board.
Yeah, absolutely. And we spend a lot of time talking about this, especially when a new legislature comes in, because there's a lot of people who don't know ACO. The key thing to understand is that the appointed staff who work for me at the association, they don't take positions on bills, right? Every single bill that ACO takes a position on is a decision that has been made by county elected officials who are either on our legislative policy committee or our board of directors or both. And so it's elected county officials of all offices, of all political stripes, who make those decisions. If they don't decide on a decision, then ACO doesn't have a position on that bill. Sometimes we get calls and they say, hey, I think the sheriffs really care about this. How do you guys feel? And I have to say, my sheriffs have not weighed in. That's all I say, because it's not my job or the job of my employees to guess how any of our elected officials would feel about a piece of legislation. Even if we might know, it's not my job to speculate. If they don't tell me, we have no position.
I completely agree with that. We are driven and directed by elected officials, and we do our best to put the information together, which is often heavily informed by professional staff in the counties who really understand how things work. But weekly, we get together with our folks to take direction on bills and where they want us to go. You all do the same thing.
Absolutely, Craig.
Now, as you use your crystal ball going into the next session, are there particular issues that affect the county's interests that you see emerging, either that you're starting to work on now, maybe through stakeholder meetings, or you just anticipate rolling in?
I would say it's going to be a challenging year in the election space. And there were many years where I never said that. Pre-2016, that was not really the case. Elections was a very quiet subject at the legislature. But even though it has calmed down, because we're going into an election year, it's going to ramp up. We have some legislators who are seeking higher office in the election space, and I think that's going to be a factor in terms of what kind of bills get introduced, especially in the House. And so I wish that it wasn't sort of the hotbed space that it is, but here we are. And so we will roll and deal with it like we always have.
Yeah, I suspect you're right. And what I really value about how you're presenting the perspective of the elections professionals in the state is you present it very technically. You're looking at operations, what it means, how it works, and that's really what lawmakers need to hear. I understand there's a lot of pressures on them, but I really appreciate the role of the association to just get the basics out about how this works so they can make informed decisions.
I really appreciate that. You know, there are a lot of different groups who lobby in the election space. Most of them are partisan, very partisan on one side or the other, right? And I think that ACO has done a nice job of not letting our feathers get ruffled when people are coming at us in a committee hearing, because keeping that cool demeanor is what maintains a positive ethos at the legislature. And I can see over the years how well that has worked for our association. So the staff will continue to act that way.
Yeah, it's really important. I mean, these are nonpartisan organizations.
Right.
If anything, we are policy people. Mm-hmm. We get mired in the details. We operate in a political environment. But what we're bringing to the table is policy analysis.
Correct. Absolutely.
One of the things I really value is the communication between our teams. And I know during this season and throughout the legislature, there's just a lot of back and forth communication on bills that are emerging or issues that we're working on. And I just want to give a shout out to your team. Megan, Jordy, and Rachel are phenomenal to work with, and we're very grateful to have them as partners with us. And so I know Caitlin and Jacob share that with me. The collaboration with your team is key, and we're really grateful for it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. We feel the same way about CSA, and I want to give a special shout out to your research team. The research that you are putting out for an association as small as you are, it's really stellar. So thank you. It's benefiting all the counties.
Well, thank you for that. And that's really our intent, is to support county decision making. And Vanessa and Brandon and Zoe have worked really hard to build that. And I'm glad folks are seeing it.
Absolutely.
Now, looking ahead, we both have conferences or work sessions coming up soon. ACO is going to be determining its agenda later in October. CSA's president, Lynn Pancrazzi, will be attending. So will Jacob and Caitlin. I understand it's online.
It is.
For decision making, but we're looking forward to that. You also have your conference coming up.
We do.
Plug your conference.
Absolutely. So our annual conference is December 10th through the 12th in Mesa at the Sheraton Wrigleyville. So if you're a Cubs fan, we're staying at the Cubs Spring Training Hotel. It's an opportunity to get together. There's a lot of professional development. We're going to have a big focus on AI at this conference. We have a great motivational speaker coming in. One of the things that I did when I came in as executive director is added that motivational component to our conferences, because I think it's important and it has served us well. And we're going to continue to do that. All affiliates are welcome, but you don't have to be a county elected official to come to our conference. If you work in a county, there is relevance for you. There's general session relevance. We have a variety of different workshops. We have an economic forecast. We do a political roundtable because we're right up against the new legislative session. So we welcome any and all people who have an interest in county government to attend.
Yeah, it sounds great. And I'm looking forward to attending. And kudos to Gideon. I know he does a lot of hard work to put this together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always a lot of fun to see the various elected officials from across the state.
Absolutely.
So we're looking forward to visiting. So I've got one last question for you, Jen.
Okay.
What's your favorite county constitutional office?
That is an unfair question. Oh my goodness. Okay, I'll tell you what. I will answer that question if you tell me what your favorite county is.
Well, that's a good question, Jen.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, we're out of time. And so we're going to have to talk about that next time we get together to do this.
Fair enough.
Well played. Jen, thank you very much for working with us, for our friendship over the years. And thanks for coming by. We really enjoyed visiting with you.
I think that this was great. I'm so happy and privileged to be a guest. And I think you guys are doing great work. So I'm happy to be a part of it.
Well, we look forward to doing it again after our agendas are set and we're going into the legislative session. So I want to offer special thanks to Zoe Averill for producing the podcast. And thank you to our listeners. If you want to learn more about ACO, please check out azcounties.org. And if you want to find out what CSA does to support supervisors, please check into countysupervisors.org. Until next time, thank you for joining us on Creatures of Statute.